We also have a website with a lot of these resources on green and safety topics in the Safety Institute. We get about a half a million visitors a year on our website, and we have two newsletters that have over 55,000 subscribers, and all the issues back through 2001 are indexed. So lots of great information. We also have a CEO assessment tool to help you assess your environment. So, and we'll be talking more about some of those initiatives in the next session.
Okay, sure.
I'm just going to pass this stuff out just to see some of the literature that you can order it, or it's all free, but you can see what it is.
Okay, no problem. Well, Gary just provided us, I think, a pretty compelling case about why hospitals ought to be addressing broad environmental issues because of the public health impacts. What I'd like to do in my presentation is talk about how you could address one of the, I think, probably most significant environmental impacts in this century, global warming. And the broad strategy can be stated in three words: reduce, renew, and offset. So I don't know how familiar you are with EPA's Energy Star program, but we've been around since 1992. We are a federally backed program that basically promotes energy efficiency. And many of you are probably familiar with the little blue Energy Star logo that you may have seen on products in the home or in the office. We work with manufacturers to set voluntary, you know, energy thresholds, and if they meet or exceed these particular thresholds, then they're allowed to affix the Energy Star to their products. And my part of Energy Star, we actually work with homes. You can ask your builder to buy or to build you an Energy Star rated home that is about 30% more energy efficient than the model energy code. And my part of Energy Star is in the commercial industrial sector. So we work to promote whole building energy efficiency. Yeah, essentially, I swear I'm not pushing any buttons whatsoever here. So what we do is we treat hospitals as our clients, and we try to identify the best practices in the healthcare sector, and then we spread those best practices as best we can. Like your hospital, we have a brand that we always try to make more credible to the broad public, and as you can see, over the last 16 years, the Energy Star brand here is now is in the top five most recognized brands across the country. Just a little bit of a quick tooting of our own horn: about 300 million Energy Star qualified products are purchased a year, and that's a total of 2 billion products have been purchased. Energy Star qualified products have been purchased since 1992. And in 2007 alone, Americans, with the help of Energy Star, saved $16 billion on their utility bills while reducing the greenhouse gas emissions equivalent to 27 million cars. And that's really, I think we're only scratching the surface when we talk about that. We, as I mentioned, we work with all sorts of businesses and organizations across the country. We work with over 600 hospitals right now, and here are just a few of them. In terms of square footage, our partners represent about 16% of the healthcare market, and due to rising energy prices, we have seen our hospital recruitment into the partnership actually triple last year compared to historical averages. Well, as you heard Gary mention, hospitals are the second most energy-intensive commercial pace type in the country, and EPA pegs healthcare as number four in terms of carbon emissions. That's after office, mercantile, and education. And while they may be less energy-intensive building spaces than hospitals, there's more of them, and so consequently, you get a larger carbon emissions from that. One of the challenges of this sector is, of course, providing world-class healthcare as energy efficiently as possible. And between 1999 and 2000, energy intensity in hospitals grew by 9%. Was that due to increased waste? No. I think that's probably due to additional energy intensive medical equipment being used. But, you know, make no mistake about it, commercial buildings and healthcare buildings in particular, there's a lot of energy waste that goes on. Well, many countries now are beginning to realize that our imperative in this century is to do carbon neutral buildings. It's to transition fast away from fossil fuels to renewable energy and non-greenhouse gas emitting types of forms of energy. And so the question is, what is this world going to look like? What can we do now to actually get there? Well, it's hard not to pick up a newspaper or magazine today and not read about some of these plans. There are plans to put wind farms in the Midwest. They're calling it the Saudi Arabia of wind energy. There's so much wind energy potential there. There's a grand solar plan, as Scientific American magazine has called it, where staging solar thermal arrays in the Southwest over many thousands of square miles of space would generate 70% of our current country's electrical needs today. You know, we really don't know what the 21st century clean power grid is going to look like, but we do know that on-site renewable energy is going to play a role in this. And whatever, you know, our clean energy world will look like, we do know that the first step to getting there is becoming as energy efficient as possible. We do that because it buys us time under the current power structure that we operate under. It's the cheapest way to reduce carbon. And it's also, we know that because this has been very cost effective for many, many years now. It's profitable. There's good ROI. It helps reduce vulnerability to price fluctuations with fossil fuels. And California actually provides a real good example of this from the state level. After the 1973 oil price shock, California began instituting the most aggressive energy efficiency measures in the country in terms of building codes and appliance standards. And the net result is that the per capita energy use of California is basically stayed flat for the past 30 years, even while their economy has continued to grow. What about the other 49 states over the past 30 years? Their per capita energy use has grown by 50%. And if California had been on the same path as the other 49 states had been on, then they would have had to have constructed 50 additional power plants in the state just to meet current energy needs. So how profitable is energy efficiency at your level? We've documented over the past 16 years of the Energy Star program at EPA that leading companies use about 30% less energy than their competitors. And in today's economy, what hospital can afford to waste 30% of their energy by underfunding capital upgrades or their facilities management department? Does anyone here think that energy prices are going to go down? So tackling climate change through energy efficiency is going to be good for your bottom line, and many hospitals have come to that conclusion, in particularly over the past 3 years, and we've seen a lot of activity in this sector. So you may have heard people talk about, well, we need to get to carbon neutrality for our buildings. Well, what does that mean, and how does energy efficiency play into that? Well, basically, The first thing you do is you reduce your energy use as much as you can by becoming as energy efficient as you can. And then the second step is you add on-site renewable energy where it's economically feasible. And then the third step to reach carbon neutrality is to offset the rest of your grid-supplied energy with something called renewable energy credits or green tags. And here's how you can implement some of these steps. Well, a few years ago, assessing building energy efficiency, or energy performance as it sometimes is called, was not as easy as assessing the energy performance of your automobile. We all recognize that 10 miles per gallon is pretty low energy performance for an automobile. Okay? But what about for hospitals? Is 550 kBTU per square foot per year, that's thousands of British thermal units, it's the common metric used when figuring out the energy intensity of space. Is 550 kBTU per square foot per year high or low for a hospital? Well, just as EPA developed a rating system for cars, we've also developed a rating system for commercial buildings, and we're calling it the National Energy Performance Rating System. And this system generates a statement of energy performance, much like the sticker that's generated on a new car when you see that in the car dealership lot. Now, regardless of the sector, a hospital, in this case, energy performance is going to fall somewhere along this curve. And what we've done, EPA has overlaid a 1 to 100 scale over this, with 50 on the scale as being the industry average. So these buildings on 49 and below, these are the really energy, high energy consuming buildings. These are the low energy performance buildings. And everything in the upper two quartiles to 100, these are the buildings that use a lot less energy, providing the same types of medical services. They just do it more efficiently. So a 70, for instance, tells you that your facility is operating better than 70% of its peers across the country. And on the flip side, 30% of the nation's facilities are operating better than your facility is. But all things considered, 70 is obviously a really good place to be on this scale. Well, let's put some real numbers now to this. This is a acute care facility. It's 177 beds, and it's nearly 300,000 square feet in size. And as you can see, the industry average for this type of facility is 443 kBTU per square foot per year. And the question in the previous slide about is 550 good for your hospital? Is it energy efficient? Well, in this particular case, 550 kBTU is actually pretty poor performance in terms of energy efficiency. And you can if you want to know how much energy you needed to reduce by in order to get to the next quartile if you were at the industry average, doing the math, 443 minus 353 tells you that you need to reduce your energy intensity by 90 kBTU per square foot per year. But I also want to point out the difference between the best performing 177-bed facility in the United States using 183 to the very worst performing 177-bed facility using over 1,000 kBTUs per square foot per year. Now, it might be easy to explain this discrepancy by saying, oh, well, all the new hospitals are actually in these upper two quartiles up here, and all the old hospitals are in the lower two quartiles over there. Or you might say, well, all the urban hospitals, which tend to be a little bit wealthier than the rural hospitals, they're the ones over here, and all the rural hospitals are in the bottom two quartiles. Or you might say, well, it's patient census. But the data that we've gotten would tell us that all these explanations are wrong. There's no difference in the urban-rural split. There's no difference in the age of the facility. We have old facilities in the upper quartile, and we have brand new facilities that we see that are in the bottom two quartiles. Even though your facilities may have modern equipment, you don't know if it's an energy-efficient facility because these could be installed improperly, they could be maintained incorrectly, or they could just not have been well-designed. And so no longer are you able to say, I've got an energy-efficient facility because I've got all new, brand-new equipment in my hospital. The only way I would contend that you are able to say, I've got an energy-efficient facility is if you first benchmark its actual energy performance using a rating system like EPA's. Well, one of the most well-known recognition opportunities that we have in the Energy Star program is this Energy Star label. You already have seen the Energy Star on, I think it's now over 50 different product categories now in the U.S. Well, we also use that label to recognize the top performing energy efficient buildings in the country as well. And these are buildings that have rated at least a 75 all the way up to 100 in EPA's rating scale. And these are facilities that use 35% less carbon dioxide and they use 40% less energy than their peers on average. So you can find this Energy Star on hospitals, medical offices, hotels, supermarkets, office buildings, and schools throughout your community. And currently over 6,000 hospitals across the country have earned the Energy Star from EPA. Hospital, 6,300 buildings. In the case, you actually raise a very interesting point. Hospitals is the only space type in our entire rating system where this label actually means the campus itself is Energy Star. It's applicable to multiple buildings. In every other case, it's applicable to just one building. And the darker the color on the map means the larger number of Energy Star rated buildings in the country. So you can see just how Energy Star-ish your state is by looking at the map. Well, CO2 has not formally been declared a pollutant by my agency, but President Obama has directed our agency to determine whether or not CO2 is a pollutant under the current Clean Air Act. And certainly many of you are aware that Congress is now looking at some sort of a cap-and-trade law or potentially even I know on the Republican side of the House, they're interested in a carbon tax as a way to address the reduction of carbon in this country. And however way this plays out, companies and industries all across the nation are beginning to prepare for that by measuring and tracking their carbon footprint. And EPA's rating system actually does this for you automatically when you log into your own account, your own private account. And it will take into account what your location is, because as you can see here, you've got different energy supply mixes all around the country. In the Northwest, you've got a lot of hydro and nuclear power. So the CO2 emissions in the Northwest facilities are not going to be as high as emissions, for instance, here in the Rocky Mountains, where you've got a lot of coal-generated electricity. So, again, the statement of energy performance that I pointed out in an earlier slide, you are able to track your CO2 emissions automatically whenever you rate your building or update your rating. So what should be your overall reduction strategy, since this is that first stage of those three stages that I mentioned. Well, it is earn the Energy Star for every facility that you have. And when you, if you are part of a healthcare system, you're going to see your entire portfolio of buildings fall on this 1 to 100 rating scale. And you're going to automatically see some buildings qualify for the Energy Star. You're going to see buildings that are very far from being Energy Star. So I would contend that your goal would be to get all your buildings to be Energy Star. Those that are in the bottom two quartiles offer the best cost-effective capital upgrades for your money. Those that rank in that third quartile from 50 to 75, they probably have enough technologies in these buildings to operate better than average, but we've actually seen that you can increase the energy performance in these facilities, not necessarily by doing more capital upgrades, but by doing better operations and maintenance practices with existing equipment. And then finally, buildings that are Energy Star eligible provide great best practice case studies examples that can be documented and then disseminated throughout the rest of the healthcare system. And if you're building new facilities, you can actually have your architect build an Energy Star qualified hospital for you as well. And Muskogee Community Hospital, in fact, became the first hospital in the nation last month to receive this designation, designed to earn the Energy Star. And they are anticipating that this hospital, once it opens its doors, will be operating in the top 20% in the nation for energy efficiency. So what this tool does is it's called Target Finder. And rather than assuming that a certain set of strategies will get you an energy efficient building, what it does is it allows you, you get your architect to estimate the annual energy consumption of your particular design. And then your design total consumption figures is put into Target Finder, and then it's going to get a rating on a scale from, in this case, 50 to 100. So if you wanted to design an 80 hospital on the rating scale, and the Target Finder tells you that your current design is at a 65, all that means is it tells you you've got to go back to the drawing boards and increase the energy efficiency measures of that design to then get it to the Energy Star level. Well, we've identified 80 hospitals that are currently low-carbon hospitals in the country, those that have earned the Energy Star. And here is one of them. This is Shriners Hospital for Children in Houston. And back in 1996, when they opened their doors, they actually went back and found the old bills, and they found out this brand new hospital wasn't even industry average. It rated a 42 in 1996. And over the period of time, actually, they initially benchmarked it in 2002, but over time, they were able to earn the Energy Star for the first time in 2003. And then in both 2004 and 2005, they increased their rating yet again to an 88, earning two more labels. And then in 2006 and 2007, they were in the 90th quartile in the country. This happens to be one of the most labeled Energy Star labeled hospitals in the country to date. And over time, they have been able to document that their avoided costs by becoming much more energy efficient. They've saved over $1 million that, because Shriners is a free healthcare type of hospital for children, they've been actually, instead of putting that money to the utility companies, they've been actually to fold that back into providing more and better health care for their patients in Houston. Okay, well, the next step after you've reached ENERGY STAR levels is to actually put on-site renewable energy into your facility where it's economical. And there are several hospitals that are putting on-site renewable energy into their facilities. When they do that, when they own the solar arrays in this particular case, they are producing, those solar arrays are producing anywhere between 1 to 3% of the total energy of that hospital. There is one hospital in Ireland that has plopped a wind turbine down on their campus, and that is currently producing 70% of their electrical needs now. I don't know of any hospital in the U.S. that is thinking about wind turbines. Solar is much more common. But there is a new way to do solar that is actually, I think, promising to put way more solar on existing hospitals and other types of commercial buildings, and it's called the Solar Power Purchase Agreement. Are people familiar in general with this concept of basically a solar power vendor comes to you and installs solar panels on your roof, and it's capital free. They own the panels, but you don't. All you do is you provide the space, and then that solar firm is responsible for maintaining the system and all the economic risks associated with that. And then what you get in return is a very predictable long-term pricing. These contracts range anywhere from 10, 15 to 20 years at a time, and it starts at rates that are better than your current grid supplied energy price levels. And so here's a way for you to get solar PEL on your facilities without having to go through a steep learning curve. And it's steep because I know it personally. I actually have solar on my house, and I spent a year in the research mode before actually putting these panels up to learn all about what types of solar there are, which would be best for us, and the whole thing. But all that with a solar power purchase agreement is outside of your realm of responsibility. The only thing that would be that you would need to be particularly aware of is that when you sign these contracts, you are now locked in for 10 to 20 years of not doing any particular change to that building or that space. And so certainly that you have to check the capital plan for your hospital to ensure that something like this makes sense for you. I have a slide that will answer that in, I think, one after this. There is a website, Green Tech Media, came out with a report that is looking at PV installations in commercial buildings over the next few years. And the green is PPA provided, and the yellow on the bar chart is the quote-unquote old model where you own it yourself. And last year they forecast well over 90% of commercial installations for solar were through the PPA model, and this year they're projecting as much as 95%. So in answer to this gentleman's questions in the middle, how much does a solar PPA potentially mean for a hospital? Well, this is the first hospital that I'm aware of that is using PPA. They have a 736 kilowatt system that is going to meet 50% of that hospital's needs, 50%. And it's It's an installation in their parking lot on a ground-mounted tracking system, which is actually one of the more sophisticated ways of doing solar. It follows the sun as opposed to remaining fixed. And Tioga Energy is one of the many solar service product providers that are providing power purchase agreements to hospitals and other commercial buildings as well. The last step in becoming carbon neutral is to offset any grid remaining grid energy that you've got coming into your hospital, and that's through what's called a green power purchase, or a renewable energy credit is another name for it. And basically, what you buy doesn't mean that you get green electrons coming into your hospital. All that means is that you're allowing green power, additional green power, to come onto the grid that otherwise, in theory, would not be there. And the one that we recommend is what is called GREENE certified renewable energy credits. So, to sum up, your roadmap for carbon neutrality is reduce, get the ENERGY STAR for your facilities first, then put on renewable on-site renewable energy where it's economically makes sense, and then offset the remaining with a GREENE purchase. If you want to go beyond your building, there is a study from Britain's National Health Service that talks about here's the building energy use. Here's the carbon footprint of your building energy use. Here's the carbon footprint for travel. And here's the carbon footprint for procurement, all the embedded energy in pharmaceuticals and equipment that comes from all around the world. If you want to go into much more challenging territory, certainly you can do so. I would recommend that you go through your building first and get everybody's chops a little bit developed on that first before doing the broader assessment of climate neutrality. Besides ENERGY STAR, we have many types of other voluntary programs at EPA that will help you do that. We've got Climate Leaders, the Green Power Partnership, the Combined Heat and Power Partnership, if you've got CHP possibilities, WasteWise, WaterSense, and SmartWay. Again, these are all free. ENERGY STAR is all free. They've already been paid for. These are resources out there that are waiting to be used. And we are seeing, as I mentioned, a tremendous amount of interest in these tools, especially over the last several years. So with that, I know we're a little bit late in terms of Q&A, but I'm going to open up the floor now to any questions for Gary or me. Do we answer everything that we could possibly answer? Were we that good? Yes. Absolutely. We've got a five-stage approach at ENERGY STAR that we recommend that facility managers follow. And certainly insulation is depending upon where the facility is located, it could certainly be a very good way to reduce energy waste, absolutely.
The next session after this is going to delve a little bit deeper into both the reverse auction that Gary mentioned, as well as walking through one hospital's journey, Geisinger, through their energy efficiency over the last couple of years and how they were able to become more energy efficient and get return on their investment. Maintenance as well as technology. So if you want to stay around for 15 minutes, and we'll be starting our next section at 11 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Mark, that was terrific. Are you in D.C.?
I am, yes.
I'm in Frederick.
Oh, you are?
I'm at the road from you.
Oh, great.